Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I hear horror stories all the time that the people group is too pro-company, not pro-employee. To help dispel that, just take time to listen to the organization. It doesn't have to be through an engagement survey. You can host, like I do, people talk sessions. That was another thing that came out of this, is hosting listening sessions that I've labeled people talk, people chat type sessions to get feedback. And you break it down. It doesn't have to be the whole organization at once. You break it down into small, bite-sized, manageable pieces so that you're interacting with a specific group, a specific target area, to be able to get feedback, because everyone's problems aren't the same, but groups of problems might be similar, right? And so you select that feedback, receive it, provide the feedback to the managers and the leaders within the organization, and that helps to build a strong, thriving culture, because you're able to root out some real problems that people on the surface probably aren't looking for.
What if everything you've been told about your first 90 days in a new role was wrong? What if we've been conditioned to believe that we need to over-index for quick wins and maximum impact during those first 90 days? We've been told that we need to make an immediate impression. What if all of those things that we've been told about our first 90 days really sets us up for some bad mistakes when they happen? When we look at today's conversation, we're going to really look at whether it makes sense for us to hit fast forward during the first 90 days, or does it make more sense for us to slow down? Who you just heard from is Damar Phillips. He's a seasoned HR executive with over 20 years of experience in leading transformative human resources strategies. He is the vice president of people and culture at RS Americas, and he excels in creating inclusive, high-performing workplaces that foster talent development and organizational growth. Damar's leadership is rooted in strategic collaboration, driving business outcomes through effective people management and culture building initiatives. In his current role, he oversees global people operations, championing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and leading efforts in succession planning, performance management, and employee engagement. His career includes impactful roles at Hylion, Tucker Power Sports, where he led workforce expansions and HR transformations. Beyond his corporate responsibilities, Damar is the chief consultant for Under God's Care, a faith-based organization supporting underserved communities. He holds an MBA, a Master of Science in Human Resources Management, and a Master's of Science in Law. Damar is also a certified senior professional in human resources and a senior certified professional. Outside of work, Damar enjoys spending time with his family and friends, traveling, and is a passionate Dallas Cowboys fan. His proudest accomplishments are raising his daughter, Kaya, and his nephew, Kavant. He lives by Dr. Maya Angelou's quote, "People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." Damar, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jim. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Looking forward to this conversation. So let's jump right into it. What'd you screw up, Damar?
I think, like other professionals, especially new professionals getting into the industry, I try to come in and make a big impact immediately, which is one of the biggest myths of the first 90 days that you could fall into. And like everyone else, I did. I came into an organization that I started as the head of HR, was given a big project, and I worked night and day to make that project. And I completed within 3 weeks. And when I turned it into the executive vice president, who was my boss at the time, he looked at me like I was crazy. What did you do? How did you do this? Why did you do this? And I was dumbfounded. I was like, this was the key project that you provided, which was to revise an employee handbook that had been passed on by my predecessor, who happened to be a lawyer at the time. She had left the company. And I worked night and day to think I was making a great impression and turned it into him. And he thought I had lost my mind.
Let's dig into that a little bit. You did all that work, you turned it in, and you got that response from your boss. What was going through your mind at the time?
I was the head of HR, the highest ranking HR person there at the time, but this was the executive vice president and co-owner of the company. And so when your boss is looking over his glasses, peering at you, saying, what the heck did you do? You're in shock. Two, you're thinking, well, wow, this is a career limiting move that I just did. And the other part was, hey, I'm proud of my work. Why are you attacking me like this? And so I had to process all of those emotions quite quickly. It was one of the strangest feelings that I'd ever had, thinking I had pleased my boss because I had went through the work and had done the work to research the things that need to be in the handbook, done comparisons, looked at the writings, found mistakes that the lawyer had made, which is probably why she was no longer there, and wanted to be recognized for my hard work and diligence. And instead, I got hit with the, what the heck are you doing? You're not a lawyer. Why would you change something that the lawyer had stated when the lawyer was factually wrong and incorrect? I had to reset pretty quickly my emotional state and said to him, hey, I've done the work. I've done the research. I have documented my sources. Here is the information. And you have the final say if you want to accept the changes that I recommend or not. And ultimately, we end up accepting the changes and the handbook was published. But it's a very debilitating type of a situation where your boss is looking at you like you've created a cardinal sin by coming into the organization within the first 3 weeks of being there and turning it in.
One of the things that I heard from, you know, your emotional state at the time, you mentioned that you had to process all this stuff all at once. And this is one of your earliest leadership roles in HR. And you've put in a lot of work and you've delivered a work product that you believe is pretty rock solid and you've documented everything there. And you get this feedback. And if it were me, the only time you can tell when I get mad is when my ears turn red. And I would have been having a red-eared moment and gotten defensive in that moment and started defending my work. So when you look at that time and you're processing all of this stuff and all of this effort all at once, what were the things that you used in the moment to keep yourself from getting overly defensive?
That's a great question, Jim. I had to remove myself from that situation, right? Because I do not have a poker face whatsoever. And so when I'm upset or when I'm angry, my face is a mural to my emotion. And it's one of the things I've been working on throughout my 20 plus year career is trying to become more adaptable to that. But I also want to be authentic. So I embrace my emotion. I'm not going to try to hide it or be something fake. So what I had to do was remove myself from that situation, pleasantly got up after the conversation was finished and just walked out. I had to go back to my office, which was a nice office, I must say, look out the window, go for a walk, do those things to just process it. Because again, this is your boss who has your career in their hand, literally. And I could not deal with that. And I knew that the quality of my work would stand the test of time. So I didn't have fear there that it was an inferior or a rushed project that was being turned in. The work was the work, right? And I let that speak for itself. But getting up out of that situation, holding my tongue, which is tough at times. I think the higher up I get, the more quick that tongue comes out. So I have to watch it even more now than then. But earlier in your career, you're probably going to try to remove yourself from that situation to prevent an escalation or prevent some negative consequence occurring based off of saying something that you would later want to take back. So the fumes, I'm sure this face and these looks and that steam was coming. And my nose gets a little spread when I get a little upset. I'm sure others can relate, but removing yourself from the situation is probably the most mature, emotionally intelligent thing you could do at the time, especially when it's with the boss.
Makes sense. I want to dig in there a little bit. So you were able to remove yourself from the situation to gather. Let's say you didn't have the option of removing yourself from that scenario. Yeah. How would you have dealt with that situation if you had to deal with it in the moment? What would your approach have been then?
Respectfully, I will disagree. I think you always have the option to remove yourself. And I think it takes managerial courage, but it also takes understanding that you're not a prisoner to a company or to a position. You don't have to be loyal to someone just because they're your boss. And you always have that. But I understand where you're going with the question is if you feel, because sometimes you can feel intimidated or because the position is so much larger, if you're talking with the CEO, for example, you might not feel that you can because it is your career. I would say I would try in that situation to tie it back to expectations and understanding what the objective of the assignment was that was provided. So you can always be self-deprecating and say, I apologize if I fully misunderstood your direction and guidance when you provided this project to me to complete. I thought it was on a timetable and I worked to meet those expectations. If there was something that I misunderstood, please help clarify, and I'd be more than happy to take the work back, reassess, and bring it back in the future when it's more important or a higher priority. If you feel like you don't have an out and can't remove yourself from that situation, use that time to leverage clearing up expectations around the project. Make sure that you fully understood what prioritization is assigned to that project and take it back as a lesson learned, as an opportunity to build rapport with your supervisor, whether it's the CEO of the company or a line manager, and clarify expectations. There's never a wrong time to do that.
That's really good feedback. And I think the one thing that I would probably add on top of that, because my default tends to be sarcastic in nature, so I would probably add filters on top of what my default is so that you're not putting things out there in the ether to make people look at you sideways. So that's really good feedback. Having gone through that experience, what were the major lessons that you took away from having that bomb dropped on you when you put in all that work?
Yes, a couple of things just pop into mind. First, which is something I do today, I now take a listen, look, learn approach for the first 90 days. Actually, probably the first 100 days, because I think 90 days, it really isn't enough time, but like the first 100 days or so. And I try to listen to employees. Being the vice president of people, that's my passion, right? So hearing the voice of the customer, you hear marketing campaigns or sales or whatever group talk about the voice of the customer. In people, my voice of the customer is my employees, right? So taking time out of your day, whether it's over the first 30, 45 days, to listen to the organization, to hear what these low-hanging fruit items are, right? Benefits and pay will always be there. So I even throw that out because that's a longer term project process to do. But I want to hear, are there cultural things? Are there undercurrents that you aren't aware of? What is the culture? Can you define it? And so I take a listen, look, learn approach. The look is understanding what the processes are, understanding some of the policies, some of those things that are things that you might have the ability to change over time. And then the learn is how you apply it. How do you apply the things that you've heard, the feedback that was provided over your first 45 days? It's obviously ongoing, right? But I'm just trying to break down the first 90 to 100 days. How do you apply what you've learned, what you've heard by looking at the policies, the processes, the procedures, and try to implement that? And so I take that as a number one, is listen, look, and learn. Number two, you can't underestimate the importance of relationships. And relationships, to me, is a contact sport. You actually have to get up out of your office. You have to go down to the warehouse if you have operation employees. You have to get out to your sales force, see where they're at, out with the customer doing sales. You have to visit people to understand what's happening. And those relationships help you to build up credibility and trust. And credibility and trust are those things that you want to earn. You might have positional power or positional authority. That's the entrance into the game. But what you do with that authority and what you do with that power while you're there, asking people about their family, about their personal situations, understanding that you can talk to them about their family. How's the wife doing? How's the husband doing? How's the kids doing in school? Having those personal things to help you to build those relationships is what's going to establish the rapport that you need to be able to later on implement changes that people understand are supported by you, sponsored by you, but doesn't necessarily have to be communicated by you.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. Now, that's a really good checklist of things that you took away from that experience. And you look back on all of that and you think about, how did that lesson help me springboard or accelerate my later roles in leadership? Share with us some of the big impacts that it had when it came to allowing you to fast forward on some of your later leadership roles.
Oh, absolutely. So the speed of change is like the speed of trust, right? And so those two things that I'll just talk about, the listen, look, learn approach and the relationships, that situation happened to me in 2013. It's 2025 now. And I have applied that same blueprint to any job that I've taken along the way. And I've had a few, as you can tell from the bio that you read, all great, amazing opportunities. But I've applied that same approach with every people organization that I have led and mentored and helped develop, is that first you have to fully understand who your customer is. And you can never lose sight that we are the representatives of people. I hear horror stories all the time that the people group is too pro company, not pro employee. To help dispel that, just take time to listen to the organization. It doesn't have to be through an engagement survey. You can host, like I do, people talk sessions. That was another thing that came out of this, is hosting listening sessions that I've labeled people talk, people chat type sessions, to get feedback. And you break it down. It doesn't have to be the whole organization at once. You break it down into small, bite-sized, manageable pieces so that you're interacting with a specific group, a specific target area, to be able to get feedback, because everyone's problems aren't the same, but groups of problems might be similar. Right. And so you select that feedback, receive it, provide the feedback to the managers and the leaders within the organization. And that helps to build a strong, thriving culture, because you're able to root out some real problems that people on the surface probably aren't looking for.
There's a couple of things that you've mentioned in your last couple of answers that I liked. One was how relationships are a contact sport. And then when you pair that with your people talk or listening sessions, that really adds a bookend to it. And what's interesting about it is that a lot of organizations will talk about all the things that they want to do or they say they do, but they never actually move it into execution. It's always this talk and listening bit. It's never action. And the fact that you actually tied it into an action element of it, I think that's really important in terms of when you're looking at overall employee morale and engagement. So really good stuff there. I want you to zoom out a little bit. And I want you to think about this entire experience. And now I want you to speak to that person that's maybe 10, 15 years behind you, maybe stepping into their first leadership role. You're advising them on what their approach should be over that first 90 days, first 100 days. What are the things that they should be thinking about? And more importantly, how do they work back that level of urgency that they might have internally that, oh, I got my first big title, I need to prove myself. What's your advice to them?
If I had someone who was telling me tomorrow, hey, in 20 years, you'll be a VP of a multi-billion dollar organization supporting however many employees, I would say, what? I don't think I'm ready for that. And so I would say, don't rush your destiny. Like typically we try to rush things. This is a very impatient world. We have iPhones, information's right at our fingertips. We have Copilot that can answer anything with us, or ChatGPT in seconds. And all the entertainment that we ever want is on our phone. I don't have to go to the movies. I don't have to do the things that we used to do. In my generation, I'm a Gen Xer towards the end, but a Gen Xer. And so I didn't grow up the way that my daughter has grown up, right? With information just right there. I had to go to the library to do all these things. So I would say, if I zoomed out, I would say, be a student of whatever it is that you're going to be leading. Be a student of it. Be a continuous learner of it. Emotional intelligence is a thing. It's real. I was not prepared when I thought I was prepared for all of the turmoil that comes with leading an HR organization. I thought I wanted to be the decision maker. And then when I find out that I'm the decision maker, those decisions become gray real quick. Not everything is black and white. And so you have to prepare yourself for handling the thing that you don't want to handle if you're going to pursue that role. So be a student of it. Understand what is the highest level of risk that could potentially come. In my position, the loss of an employee, dealing with the death of an employee, is something that my role would handle, right? I had to do that when COVID hit. Wasn't prepared to do it, but I had to do it, right? And I was the one that had to make that announcement. And so I would challenge anyone that, hey, 10 years down the road, give yourself grace. Give yourself time for mistakes. Give yourself time to recover from those mistakes and always be a student of your profession. You listed off several different degrees and certifications that I have. That's part of continuous education. And it's a continuous thing that you need to do to be able to do the research to understand so that you make informed opinions and decisions, because I'm the last line of defense before a decision is made. So if it's the wrong thing, guess what? I'm right there with it. And I have the ability to either influence it one way or the other. And so I would just challenge anyone, regardless if you're in people side of things, regardless if you're the CEO of a company, when those things hit my desk, that's where the rubber meets the road most times. Because if it could be solved downstream, it would have been, right? So when you're in the executive level decision-making, make sure that you did the work prior, that you understand what the consequences are, and that you're able to sleep with yourself at night because of the decisions that you make impact people's lives.
Great stuff, Damar. If people want to continue the conversation and get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yes, LinkedIn or email would be perfect.
Awesome stuff. So I'll include that in the show notes. Damar, it's been a fun conversation, and I especially like hearing about how you screwed stuff up. So that was pretty cool. So I appreciate you hanging out with us and sharing that story. A great learning experience for a lot of folks that are early in their career. So I appreciate you sharing that. When I think about this conversation that we had, and I think about what I take away from it, there's a few things that I think are worth calling out. One is your advice that your default position in any new role should be listen, look, and learn. And that facilitates you being a student of the organization that you're in. So if you're looking at not making the mistake of rushing headlong into things just because you have that fresh, new, big title, listen, look, and learn is a great piece of advice for those folks that are stepping into those roles. And I think when you bring it into the real world, the reason why that's important is that every leadership book will teach you to seek to understand before trying to be understood. That's the practical application of how you actually bring that to life. This is the how, because we know if you don't do that, what happens? You are in a meeting with your SVP and the co-owner, and they're looking at you, asking you really uncomfortable questions, and you might be stuck in a situation where you can't escape to regather. So save yourself the heartache and make sure you're taking the time to listen, look, and learn before you start doing stuff. So really great stuff, and I appreciate you sharing that. For those of you who've been listening to the conversation, we appreciate you hanging out. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player, and then tune in next time where we'll have another leader hanging out with us and sharing their war stories about how they screwed stuff up. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.